Support for WGTD comes from Carthage College, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information is available online at carthage.edu/grad.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for Education Matters on WGTD-HD, Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin at 91.1 on your FM dial, and 101.7 in Elkhorn and 103.3 in Lake Geneva. Today's guests are the three candidates for the Racine Unified School Board in the April 4th, 2017 election. They are Mike Frontier, incumbent, District 3, Brian O'Connell, District 7, and Dennis Weiser, incumbent, District 2. Dr. Frontier is the current president of the Racine Unified School Board, and Dennis Weiser is a previous president. Up until a year ago, candidates for the Racine Unified School Board ran at large for a seat on the board. Normally, three seats were up each year on the nine-member board. A couple years ago, the state legislature passed legislation requiring that Unified be divided up into nine voting districts to assure that all parts of the school district were represented on the board. And a drawing was held giving each of the nine board members a one-year, two-year, or three-year seat. The seats that are up for the election this year are the one-year seats. This year we have only three candidates. One candidate for each seat, which means that the voters in each of these districts have only one person they can vote for unless they choose to place a write-in on their ballot. The voters in the remaining six school board districts will not be voting this year. Interestingly, in the past, we have usually had six candidates for the at-large seats on the board, so the voters had a choice and all voters were able to vote in the school board election. For our forum today, each candidate will have up to a minute and a half for an opening statement and 1 minute for a closing statement. In the remaining time, the candidates will be answering questions that I have prepared. So to get started, will each candidate describe your district for our listeners, just roughly? Mike, we'll start with you.
Yes, thank you, Dwayne. My district, District 3, is roughly borders Washington on the north, Durand on the south, the lake on the east, and almost to Lathrop on the west. It houses, I think I have the most schools in the district, if you will, so Knapp, Walden, Bull, the Early Childhood Center, and Mitchell are within this district, my third district. Third district.
Thank you. Okay, Brian?
Thanks, Dwayne. Yeah, my district is starts at the lake, North Street extended to where it would meet the lake, and then zigzags down to Kinsey and West. So it is kind of a crescent-shaped district. The schools in the district are Roosevelt Elementary School, Horlick High School, Gilmore Middle School, Julian Thomas Elementary School, and McKinley Middle School.
And yours is the district that Nielsen has been representing.
Yes, Don Nielsen's been representing that.
Right. Okay. And then Dennis.
Good morning, Dwayne. Thanks for having us here today. My district is the second district, and it goes roughly from Lake Michigan on the east border to Green Bay Road on the west. The north border is approximately Highway 11. The south border is County Trunk KR.
Okay, thank you ever so much for that, and I'm sure hopefully that will help our listeners then understand who is eligible then to vote in this coming April 4th school board election. Mike, let's start with you again as your opening statement for as a candidate.
Thank you again, Dwayne. The issues that our district is moving forward on are most significant, the most salient, and probably one that we hear most about are the academies. And these are three high schools moving into more career-focused efforts for our students. And this is very exciting. Our freshmen now have gone through a year of preparation for this. They visited colleges, Gateway and Parkside, all our 1,500 freshmen. The students have selected several career paths, and they've all got their first choice. This is just a sampling of what will come, and I think it's a major thrust and importance to our community, so that more of our children can be working and supporting better incomes for the Racine community. Secondly, and most significantly, I think also is our district board is working to build consensus by we've created guiding change documents in several areas that give the administration direction and allow them to work to create administrative directions that fall within the guidelines that we see are appropriate. And I think what the result of that has been our board is acting in collaboration and more consensus over significant issues. Finally, early childhood is a key to our future in our community. We know that it cuts the achievement gap, it helps maintain more integrated schools, and our board, along with superintendent and community leaders, are working strenuously and collaboratively with legislators to make early childhood a greater possibility for all our children.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Brian O'Connell.
The reason I'm running is because I was the city's Racine City Director of City Development from 2001 till I retired in July of 2015. And the thing I would hear over and over again as I would work with businesses and work with others who were concerned about development and job creation in the city is, how are the schools? You know, is this a place where I can find trained workers? Is this a place where the people I will employ can send their kids to school and get a good education? So the reputation of the area and the growth of the area is tied together with the reputation of the schools and the quality of the schools. That's what motivated me to put my name in and to seek election to the board. I think I can make a contribution to the board as a director of city development and a city planner. I had to work with all sorts of people, general citizens, business community, elected officials, and I think was successful in bringing people forward to work together for a common goal. That'll be what I bring to the board and what I hope to accomplish.
And that's great, because I mean, you're bringing a very broad background to the school board, and that's certainly a perspective that the board needs.
That's what I hope.
There you go. Okay, and finally on this opening statement, Dennis Weiser.
I came to Racine in 1972 almost by accident. I was placed at Case High School as an intern teacher in the math department, and I fell in love with the kids, I fell in love with their families, I fell in love with the schools, I fell in love with the community, and I've been in Racine and working with education in one form or another ever since 1972. I have a lot of experience in leadership positions. I've been on the board of directors for the public library. I'm currently on the city council for the city of Racine and have served two terms as president there. I understand how government works. I understand the needs of the community. And I think I'm in a position where I can help the school district move forward. We are at a particularly delicate position historically, in that the needs of our students are growing greater and greater because of the ever-changing job market and because of the poverty in our community. At the same time, we're getting less and less funding from the state and from the federal government, which makes the job challenging, but I'm going to stick around until we get it working properly.
There you go. Thank you ever so much. Thanks to all three of you for that. The next question, or the first question that I have here, I'm going to start then with Dennis, because it involves a background that you have as an incumbent member of the school board. During the 2017-18 school year, Dr. Hawes will be in her final year with Racine Unified, and Dr. Gallion will take over as superintendent beginning with the 2018-19 school year. What was the thinking of the board involved in this change in administration, and who will be responsible for what in the 2017-18 school year?
Dr. Hawes has been here for 4 years. Her contract was up for renewal, and the board sat down and talked with her relative to what her plans for the future would be relative to staying here, transitioning to retirement, and so on. At the same time, the board recognized that Deputy Superintendent Eric Gallion was very skilled in his leadership position, and we were anxious to keep him on board in the district to be available as superintendent at the point where the current superintendent, Dr. Hawes, left the district. We met with both parties off and on for several months. In addition, Dr. Frontier and I met with members of the community, people in businesses, people that are elected leaders, people in higher education, and we spent a lot of time talking about what was the best way to transition from Dr. Hawes's leadership to Dr. Galleon's leadership. The agreement that we all came to understand and accept was we were going to do a smooth, seamless transition by extending Dr. Hawes's contract 1 year and bringing Dr. Galleon up to speed in his leadership position. This district has a history of abrupt transitions in leadership. We wanted to avoid that because it's hard on the community, it's hard on the kids. The goal was to have a seamless transition, and I think it's working fine so far.
Mike Frontier.
Well, I think what we heard, as Dennis pointed, we did talk to many people as we looked at this transition, and the word we heard regularly was consistency. We've had many changes in the past, several superintendents over the last 10 years, and the business community and other community leaders wanted to see us continue to move forward in areas such as the academies, and they had come to know Eric through his presence here in the community. Another one of Superintendent Hawes' strong hires, Lolly hired Eric, and we see a key to the future of the success of this district as relationships. And to bring somebody new in and build, and the time that takes to create relationships was very critical that we try to minimize that lag time. So Eric has many of these skills, as Dennis noted earlier, and we thought this was a very clear, strong choice that we felt and was supported by our feedback from the community.
And Brian.
Yes, I would compliment the two incumbents that they managed this transition very well. I think community was nervous. Community was nervous that there would be disruption and a break and continuity of programs would be in question. And this has done a lot to reassure the community that this progress can continue.
And as an employee of the city, you knew how important nice transitions were then and how important they were in terms of moving ahead.
Been there when there were easy transitions and when there were difficult transitions. Yeah, and the continuity is much better.
Okay. Let's move on then to the next question. Other than the administration of the Racine Unified School District, what do you see as the one major challenge facing Racine Unified in the next 2 to 3 years? And how would you like to see that addressed? And Brian, we'll start with you.
Well, there are many challenges, of course. I would say the major challenge is the fact that the district received a failing grade in the latest Department of Public Instruction review, one of only 5 districts in the state to receive that grade. It's unfortunate because I think there is progress being made within the district, but it is... It's the elephant in the room. It's the thing that must be recognized and must be addressed. When I join the board, I will be very strong in support of the initiatives that are already underway because I think they have the potential to make progress and are making progress. Mike already made reference to the academies. I'm a strong supporter of those. There are many other initiatives that I think new curriculum in reading and in math that are going to show results. We have to give them a chance to work.
Okay, Dennis Weiser.
One of the biggest challenges facing the district right now is the fact that many of our students are living in poverty. The families do not have the resources to prepare the kids well for entry into the school system at the kindergarten level, and the students suffer for years and years into the system because of that. The solution that we're looking at the solution that we're finding is working is 4-year-old kindergarten. Some of our students take 4-year-old kindergarten, some don't. Some take it for a half day, some take it for a full day, and we can see a clear difference in their performance down the road based on their participation in 4-year-old kindergarten. If we can get more and more kids into 4-year-old kindergarten for full days, they will have a much better future in our school district.
It's my understanding, too, that the county executive is getting involved in this. Is that right?
Yes, he's been helping lobby at the state level on this. We all need to be concerned with getting as many kids as possible ready for employment or higher education when they leave our system. If they aren't prepared in that fashion, it's a problem for the whole community.
Okay, and I'm going to add, and to be good citizens, too, because as a social studies person, then that's one of the things that I'm concerned about is preparing people for citizenship, voting and participating, and like you people are doing right now, participating. Okay. Mike.
Well, in past elections, the things when I hear when I knock door about parent engagement, and as Dennis noted, poverty is a key issue. Many of our parents make minimum wage salaries. We know that we have a large number of parents who have not don't have GEDs, and well, that requires multiple parents working to make it in the city of Racine. Right now, the research from United Way says you need $60,000 salary to make in Racine without any saving. That's $30 an hour. Only 20% of our jobs provide that. So we can see where the academies, this all fits together. But another perception in the community is that behavior of some students is taking away from learning for others. And again, the superintendents proposed some strategies that we're already seeing bear fruit. These include mental health clinics, and our superintendent Hawes proposing more social workers to support kids and their families. We also have a strong new parent engagement thrust that we're pursuing. All this requires more funding. Our budget is very tight. Wisconsin, in the last 8 years, has had the second largest cuts in education in the country. Only Alabama's cut their schools more. And this is tragic. We have to make every dollar count, which again forces us to look at our budget very tightly. And the board has created some guidelines to do that. So these all fold together. We need stronger programs, and we need to maximize the dollars we have to support those so that we can be the cutting-edge district that we were in the past.
Okay, thank you all for that. And let's move on then to the next question, Act 10. What impact is Act 10 and the lack of collective bargaining between Unified and the Racine Education Association having on the school district? Dennis, we'll start with you.
The biggest impact of Act 10 is low morale for district employees. When Act 10 was adopted, they lost significant legal rights, and they lost tens of millions of dollars in salary and insurance benefits overnight. The employees are still feeling like they're in the crosshairs of someone's gun. The politics at the state level, politics at the federal level speaks to them supporting education, supporting the employees, but we are not seeing that actually take place. The work environment for the teachers and other employees in the district just has not been the same since Act 10 came down the road. They are not the happily employed employees that we're used to in previous years.
Okay. Mike, then?
Yes.
Question?
I would just reiterate, I think the morale related to Act 10 is certainly an issue. The board is concerned that when we do work through changes with our teachers, that there's a meet and confer, that we're taking teacher input, which I think is very critical for morale, and we want to honor that aspect of the law that does allow for that to happen, and we want to ensure that. And I know it does happen. There are consultation when issues of management and labor come together. So this is a crucial area for us. We want to have good relations with our staff. They're doing a very challenging job with great skill, and we need to support the spirit that drives those good teachers every day.
Okay, and Brian O'Connell. Yeah.
I share the concern about teacher morale. You know, my wife and I tutor in the public schools, and actually we're at Wadowitz right now, tutoring through the Schools of Hope program, which, by the way, I would recommend to anybody who has some free time.
Great.
But the, you know, morale is a problem, and because of the cuts, direct and cuts that were levied on the teachers and the wiping away of collective bargaining. One of the things that concerns me going forward is that we actually are approaching a teacher shortage. There are fewer teachers going into teacher education, and the boomers are retiring. So we're going to have to recruit, and we're going to have to recruit good teachers. What does a modern benefit package, a modern compensation package look like for teachers in an urban district? We'll be wrestling with that over the next several years, and I look forward to the challenge, but it will be a challenge.
Okay, and what can be done about this morale factor, this morale issue? Any thoughts on that? Anyone?
It's going to be complex to address because one of the things that creates the low morale is the fact that the rules of the game at the state and federal level are changing annually. The funding is changing annually, and that creates a lot of job insecurity for the teachers in the district. They don't know if their position will be funded beyond this year. They don't know if the processes that they have to follow are going to be changed dramatically overnight by a legislative body. It makes them very difficult to be in, makes it very difficult for them to be enthusiastic about coming to work.
Okay, anything else? Let me just, in terms of clarification, indicate that not only teachers, but all public employees, or the most public employees in the state of Wisconsin, are affected by Act 10. And so this is true then for, I suppose, Gateway Technical College people, university people, and other state employees. Mike?
Yeah, I think this is a systemic problem. You know, this may be hard to believe, but of the 42 developed nations in the world, we're 39th in taxes. This comes from a very legitimate source. This is from the Organization for Economic Development. A presidential candidate who's now president claimed we were first in the world in taxes. But personal taxes are low. I have children working in Children's Hospital, and the cut in Medicaid, the fact that the state of Wisconsin has rejected significant Medicaid funds, has put hospitals and other public institutions in great stress and their employees. And yet, having been in many of these schools, our teachers rise above this and are serving our kids very well with great energy, I must say.
Okay.
Very professional.
Okay, let's move on to another aspect of Act 10. Governor Walker's current proposal is to increase public school funding, given that district employees are paying 12% of the cost of their health insurance. Recently, I heard Tony Evers, state superintendent of public instruction, indicating that this was not very clear, and he gave an example of a school district whose employees were paying 12%, and then the district negotiated a 6% contract with another insurance company. How much are district employees paying of their health insurance costs? And can Unified meet Governor Walker's proposal if it is supported by the legislature? And Mike, I guess we start with you on this question.
Well, this question has been unclear. Dennis and I have met with area legislators, and they're not very clear exactly on what this means.
Uh-huh.
Our teachers pay a fraction of the cost of their health care. They pay a large deductible, which contributes significantly. And over the years, the teachers, because of limitations on salary, have taken improvements in medical coverage as part of their work enhancement. So this question is yet to be determined. I've talked to people at central office, and I think Madison is still trying to clarify exactly what that means.
Okay. Brian, do you want to add to that?
Well, this is another one of those things where I think teachers need predictability. They need to know, as they plan for their families and their lives going forward, you know, what will be expected of them. And again, we need to be able to offer a competitive package. And focusing on one aspect, whether it's health care or salary or promotional opportunities or whatever, changing the rules all the time is going to make it hard to recruit here in Racine, and I think in the state as well. So we're going to have to try and provide stability in spite of some of the factors that are going on in Madison, and which, frankly, you know, do not seem that well crafted. apparently this 12% requirement presumed that we were participating in a state health insurance program, which my understanding is Racine does not. So it is a poorly crafted provision that we unfortunately have to live with when it comes down from the state.
Okay, Dennis?
I would just echo the comments of Mike and Brian. This 12% figure came about because originally Act 10 said that if you were in the state health program, employees had to pay 12% of their insurance costs. The majority of school districts are not participating in the state health program, so it's unclear whether this is intended to apply to them or not. If it does apply, calculating the 10% is complex. The cost to an employee for insurance includes out-of-pocket premium costs, it includes co-pays, it includes costs for deductibles, and we have yet to hear an explanation on how those get put together to calculate the 12%.
And it all has to go through the legislature, too, so the legislature can listen to what school board members are saying across the state, and they will be responding then as well, so which makes it even more unpredictable and more of a challenge than for public employees. Mike?
I would just like to add, in the last 4 years that I've been on the board, the district has met and conferred with teachers and has worked very collaboratively and saved the community hundreds of thousands of dollars by working out systems that are apart from the state health system. So we need some freedom here to work through these issues and be responsive to the medical market.
Okay, anything else anyone wants to add, or we'll move on? Okay, let's move on to the next question. What impact are vouchers having on Racine Unified? And I guess, Brian, we start with you on that question.
The newbie, okay.
Yes.
Vouchers have a profound impact. And we lose money for each voucher that a student takes advantage of. That's less money to be used within the district for district programs. Also, the way the legislation exists, and people should be aware of this, it actually takes money out of the local tax base now. One of the things I'll do on the board is advocate that if the state wants a voucher program, the state should fund a voucher program from state resources and not require the districts to participate as funders of the program. Unified has financial challenges ahead. There is a declining student pool. There has been a baby bust after several years. This competition between us and other educational opportunities, again, creates uncertainty, creates difficulty in budgeting, and I think the legislature should take responsibility for this program and own up to its parenthood of it and responsibility for funding it and not put the burden on the local district.
Okay, Dennis?
The voucher program has been very difficult for the school district to address. Racine was given a unique set of rules for the voucher program, a unique set of funding processes. They do not align with what Milwaukee is expected to do. They do not align with what the remainder of the state is expected to do, and the rules and funding practices have been changing almost on an annual basis. It's been very difficult to manage, and it's a questionable solution at best. If Kenosha were having a crime wave, if the state were to come in and mandate that Kenosha have both a police force and a private security force, people would look at that and say that's a waste of resources, putting money into two different programs that are trying to achieve the same function. Same is true for public education. If the public's being asked to fund a private school system and a public school system, it's a improper use of funds. Putting the funding in a single vehicle aimed at improving education for the kids is going to be more efficient use of the tax dollars.
And that makes a good analogy. I hadn't thought of that particular analogy in terms of police force and putting in a private police force. And it seems to me I have read, the Racine Journal Times has published a list of how many students are voucher students at various schools. It seems to me St. Catharines had 80% of their students on vouchers. Is that right? Am I, or was it 60%?
It may also vary. They St. Catharines created a middle school not that long ago. You're talking about St. Catharines High School.
Yes.
And I think voucher participation in that is high in the middle school, but I don't know a ratio.
Okay. And then, Mike, I guess we'll finish with you on this question.
Well, vouchers, as Dennis noted, we have a higher threshold to allow people to go to voucher schools. So you take a Madison or other Beloit, in those areas, money is provided up to a certain percent of income. Ours is far higher than that. And I think we are suffering by 1,000 cuts as we lose these students. I think it's important to note, though, that research does not show that vouchers significantly improve student achievement. So what we're buying in many cases are students going to schools that are not as diverse as ours. And let's face it, America of the future is going to be a very diverse entity, and that's part of the learning process as well. So while that may not show up in test results, it is a powerful part of learning. So my love of the public schools is that it's diverse, and we bring a variety of students together to learn together, and they actually do learn together, and it helps cut the achievement gap. The biggest determiner of achievement gap consolidation is integration. Integrated schools do a better job. So while vouchers are there and they're hurting our district, I think we can offer a product that challenges people to make those decisions.
And that segregation of schools is getting even more serious in our society as we move forward. And one of the basic reasons for creating the public schools in the first place, they were called the common schools, was to bring everybody together and so forth. And I read this book not too long ago, Our Kids by Robert Putnam, and he makes the point that in his community in Ohio, that when he graduated from high school in 59, that it was a very diverse school. And then the schools today are much less diverse in terms of at least socioeconomics and well as race. So this is a real issue.
You know, I'd just like to say that is so true. And even it's not new. When my children were younger in grade school, we had the choice of sending them to a parochial school or sending them to the public schools. And my wife and I, on that criteria, largely decided to send them to the public schools, knowing that it was a diverse world out there, and they would be stronger, they would know more, and be better able to deal with others by going to the public school program.
And I've used this example before on this program. I have two daughters and a granddaughter then who are products of Racine Unified School District, Park High School to be exact, and they are all three professional women in urban areas, and I feel that they are able to function better just because of the background that they had being raised in Racine and being a product of Racine Unified because of the diversity of students that they lived with as students. At this point, I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Dwayne Olson, and you're listening to Education Matters on WGTD-HD at 91.1 on your radio dial from Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Today, our guests are three candidates for the Racine Unified School Board in the April 4th election. They are Mike Frontier, Brian O'Connell, and Dennis Weiser. We have discussed a variety of current education issues related to Racine Unified. Now back to our discussion. And let's see, I think then I start with you then, Dennis, on this round. Academies. Mike mentioned the academies earlier, and they've been mentioned. How are the high school academies, which were initiated this year, doing from your perspective? What needs to be done to make them even better as we move forward?
The academies, from what we're hearing, are off to a tremendous start. The students are enjoying it. The staff is doing a good job of presenting material in a new and different version to the students. The academies are structured to grow 1 year at a time. This year it was only the freshmen in the academies. Next year it'll be the freshmen and sophomores. The following year, freshmen, sophomores, and juniors. As we get into the upper level classes, the challenges are going to become greater and greater. At the freshman level, whether you're going into one of the trades, whether you're going into science, whether you're going into manufacturing, the coursework is fairly similar. As the students moving to the upper level classes, the coursework will be more differentiated, which is going to require more investment of time by the staff. It will require more investment in equipment and special facilities. We're hoping that the business community will help us in some of these areas, but we're off to a good start, and we're looking forward to great things down the road.
And certainly using other facilities besides the school district's facilities is a wonderful advantage then in the academies.
Absolutely right. If we can do some of the instruction without duplicating facilities that exist elsewhere, everybody comes out ahead.
Mike?
Well, this has been a very exciting year. All our freshmen, 1,500 freshmen, have visited a college, Gateway or Parkside.
Great.
When we started up our little school in Racine, San Juan Diego, many years, that was part of what we did. And it's hard to believe, but many kids have never had that opportunity. And now, and I've seen kids respond to saying being on the UWM campus in Milwaukee and at Parkside here. So this is a tremendous step forward. We've had career expos this year, exposing kids to hundreds of jobs that are right here in Racine, and it demonstrates tremendous collaboration with the business community and the school district. Dan Thielen's done an amazing job there. I'll talk about curriculum later, but there's many initiatives there to provide curriculum that will support these academies as we move into sophomore, junior, and senior years.
Okay. Brian?
My youngest son went to Horlick, and I remember him starting there, and it just the opportunities not being structured in any way that you could craft a roadmap through to graduation. I see a great advantage that the academies do that for a student, as well as exposing them, and particularly in their freshman year, to the options, to the choices that they're going to have. He was the one child in our family that did not go to a traditional four-year college. He wound up getting a technical certificate and now is an engineering tech at a very good company, making a very competitive wage.
And doing very well.
Yes. So, but to have that presented to him as a freshman and the start down a particular pathway would have saved an awful lot of exploration and other time and would have gotten him to his career faster.
Okay, let's see then where we are in terms of, I guess that's the end of that question, right? Dennis, we started with you, so let us move on. One of the things I want to just get in here is my concern for curriculum today, particularly for social studies teachers and what's going on in terms of the division in our society today and the challenge I think that social studies teachers face then present government and the responsibilities of governments and so on. Any thoughts in terms of that? I know that this board only, your role is to adopt curriculum that has been created by the professionals and faculty and staff of the district. But any comments in terms of curriculum? And let's start then, Mike, with you.
Well, it's critical that we are presenting curriculum in an objective way. We cannot advocate for
right.
certain positions.
Exactly.
So I think I would see the lens of, say, you're teaching civics today or history or social studies. The categories of how do the three legislative branches of the government work? And we do simply use the news of the day as a lens to see how these balance each other or interact with each other. So the news of the day is very stimulating. And I think you could get very strong discussion from your students, but when in all cases the teacher cannot be person who advocates for a certain direction.
Right.
So in a sense, I think this is a very unique time in our history where even our youngsters are seeing the power of government to change lives. We're seeing some of our Hispanic students very much in fear over possible deportation.
Yes.
So these issues would strike, I think, bring some great engagement to these classes. And I'm sure our teachers are presenting in a very professional way their role as a neutral presenter of categories and let the children engage in those issues.
Okay. Anyone else want to comment on this issue of curriculum and the challenges we're facing?
I would say the challenge for the district is to, using Mike's words, is to be objective about how items get presented. If you're teaching history, for instance, the focus needs to be on what decisions were made and what were the outcomes, not the personalities of people involved, not overarching political beliefs, but how was the decision made, what happened as a result. If we focus on that, we can avoid getting entangled in some of the political issues that seem to be pervasive in our society right now. I know the district is very sensitive on this issue, trying to keep politics out of the classroom,
right,
and works real hard with the staff to make sure we don't have problems in this area.
Okay. Any other comments? Mike?
Well, I do want to comment on the curriculum related to the academies, because this is all new for us.
Yes.
I'd like to share with the community what's in place to address that. There's course sequencing teams that are looking at State Academy on health. What would be the sophomore response now, as many of our kids have chosen this health curriculum? By the way, that was the largest enrollee area was health.
Really?
Yes. And I should also point out, of the academies that we have, all our students got their first choice, so we're able to honor that. But there are teams that are out, advanced teams, planning those curriculums. There's progress monitoring. We were one of a few districts in the country that the Ford NGL group identified as a successful team that they'd like to work with, and they've been in the classrooms observing teachers and block scheduling, giving them feedback on how it's going, so they can strengthen their skills in this new way of teaching a longer period. And finally, we have highly effective teamwork going on, where teachers are taught how to interact and support each other in their curriculum, which I think is the highest form of collaboration. And finally, we have teams working in project-based learning, because all these block schedules are based on project-based learning. So we have several initiatives to support this exciting new direction related to curriculum.
Okay, and as my perspective in terms of what's going to happen in education as we move forward, I think we're going to see much more active learning terms of what goes on in classrooms. It's simply because I'm looking at these 15,000 people without GEDs or high school diplomas, and I think that a lot of them probably dropped out because learning wasn't that active. Brian, do you want to make a quick comment? We're running out of time here.
What I was going to comment on was your earlier observation about common experience, common across all people and all, and how our educational experience can serve that.
Yes.
It can be a uniting factor. The old joke about everything I needed to know I learned in kindergarten. But some of those things about working with each other can be as instrumental as the reading, writing, and arithmetic, how to behave with others. And as Mike mentioned, the district is looking to that, to providing a safe environment for children so that they can interrelate and learn from each other on the day-to-day.
To our radio audience, we say thank you for being with us today as we visited with our great guests, Mike Frontier, Brian O'Connell, and Dennis Weiser, the three candidates for the Racine Unified School Board in the April 4th election. We have discussed a variety of current education issues related to Racine Unified and education in general. Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for another edition of Education Matters. This is your host, Dwayne Olson, thanking you for being with us today.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
I'm Gregory Berg, and Monday's morning show here on WGTD includes a conversation with best-selling author Mark Elliott, talking about his most recent biography, Charlton Heston, Hollywood's Last Icon. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation. For more information on all that Carthage has to offer, go to their website, carthage.edu.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Racine Theater Guild hosts the Nine Worlds Ensemble and the Ivy Ford Band in the upcoming Gene Jazz Series on Saturday, March 25th at 7 p.m. Tickets are $18 for adults and $16 for seniors. Visit racinetheater.org.
Support comes from Kenosha Winter Harbor Market, featuring Bristol-based Living Hope Farm, offering fresh microgreens, wheatgrass, squash, dried beans, and locally harvested